Hey, everybody. Welcome back. It's Dr. Sophie for our weekly podcast. This week's topic is pretty interesting. It's how to say no with compassion, something very difficult for many of us to go through, especially in relationships, much less non-relationship things. But the more intimate and closer things are, the harder it is to say no. So we're going to be learning how to say no with compassion today, looking at things of when should you say no and how to say it. Is it important to do it compassionately, or should we just blurt it out and say no and walk away? Are there general guidelines we should follow? Are there situations that require different ways of handling it than other situations? And of course, you're going to take away those 4 points from this podcast that are going to help you navigate better. Please listen in to me anytime you want. You can call me at any time at 1-855-SOPHIE-NOW or 1-855-767-4966. Each caller will receive a free signed copy of Side by Side, the Revolutionary Mother-Daughter Program for Conflict-Free Communication. And yes, that's my book. So stay tuned. We'll be right back. Okay, guys. So joining me today is Dr. Jeremy Sherman. He is a PhD in decision theory and holds a master's in public policy from UC Berkeley. He's written over 1,000 articles about everyday decision making for Psychology Today, has written 4 books on the subject, and is going to give us all of his brain and expertise today. Dr. Sherman, you with us?
I am with you.
How are you?
I'm well. How are you doing?
Good. Thank you. Thank you for your time and your brain today.
Uh-huh.
Did you bring it?
I think I did.
Oh, good.
Sweet.
Good. So tell me, what do you think about this whole trying to say no with compassion? And how do you, like, go about getting the words that feel right?
Yes, well, I think about it a lot. It comes up often enough in life. We find our greatest comfort in moving towards people. Lots of people think that love is the answer. I think that love is the question. Where to love, where not to love, where to give our attention, where to give our affirmation, and all of that. My work is very broad. The article that brought me to your attention was one in which I cover saying no or ending things or not joining things in partnerships, in business, in all sorts of areas of life. And that's partly driven by my focus. I believe that dilemmas are way more fundamental than the formulas we use to try to address them. And I've paid a lot of attention to what I call the wanderings of the world. And some of the most basic, they even show up in biology, is should I join this? Should I stay with this? And then with life, with humans, should I say this? So you combine those three, should I join this, yes or no? Should I stay with this, yes or no? And should I say this, yes or no? And you're dealing with the fundamental conundrum, which is how do you deal with that difficult challenge of saying no in a way that's clean, compassionate, and also clear?
So tell me what clean would look like and what that means in that part of that decision.
Yeah, okay. Well, clean, one of the challenges in saying no, especially when you've been involved in some kind of relationship with someone for a while, that could be a partnership or a family relationship, a friendship or a business relationship, any of those things, is that when you're saying no, you're converting a we. You're halfway through saying no. You're changing from a we to two separate people. I refer to this as the Tonto paradox, based on an old joke in which the Lone Ranger says, "We're surrounded by Native Americans. What should we do?" And Tonto says, "What do you mean, we, Kemosabe?"
Right.
Yeah. So the we kind of dissolves halfway through our declaration of no. Are we still a we or two separate needs? It can be difficult to tell. And also, it can be hard because old habits die hard, especially the habits of forging the bond that kept us together. So clean, for me, has to do with making that transition in a way that's definitive. We are no longer a we. You can go your separate way. I can go my separate way. Obviously, that comes once you're decided to end it. It's very sticky to raise the question about whether to end it. Can you imagine? Yeah, you tell an employee or a partner, "I'm thinking about ending it with you," and it changes everything. But I'm mostly here focused on once you've decided you're going to end it, how to end it cleanly.
And then compassionate doesn't mean that they're going to necessarily like that, even though
no,
it's coming
it doesn't
across
mean
that way.
That. Yeah, we along with love is the answer, there's a hunch floating around that there's always a way to say things that is nice. The problem with that, of course, is that you may do your best to say something nicely, and you should, but it's still going to be a disappointment. It's just no fun to lose something that you value.
So you got
and a relationship can be like that. So as for compassion, you do your best, and I have some suggestions about how to do your best. But you also know that your best may still leave whoever you're rejecting frustrated, angry, trying to create the we again to say, why are you doing this to me? Why is talking to you like talking to a brick wall? When, in fact, at this point, they are talking to a brick wall. I mean, you've ended it. You're no longer a we.
Right. You're not engaged.
Right.
Okay. So then it's really learning if you're going to say no and then how you're going to say it.
Right. And there's no simple formula for saying no, but for me, it seems there are some basic things to keep in mind. One is don't act like we're still a we. Don't say you're ending it. Now indulge me while I monologue at you about giving myself the reasons that make me feel good about my decision to say no. That's not compassionate.
Right. So
that's kind of indulgence.
So yeah. That means, like, even though you say it, you have to behave it.
Yeah, you have to behave it. And it's actually, in the long term, it's a favor. It sends a very clear signal that it's over. If you send ambiguous signals, you know, we're over and now let's continue to work it out like we used to while I give you the Monday morning quarterbacking about why we failed, you're sending a very mixed message that gives them hope that you actually don't want to sin.
Right, because, you know, a lot of people will say, well, you're just being selfish, or the person saying no feels they're being selfish, but they're not necessarily always being selfish, correct?
Well, selfish is another one of these funny terms. I'm currently writing a book on the natural history of decision-making, which actually starts with where do selves come out in the universe? You know, how do you ever get selves in the first place? We are all selves. Right. And selfish can be read either as a moral sin, which is how it's often used, or I tend to use it more like we would use the word bluish, which is kind of blue. You know, we are all selfish. That is, we look out for ourselves. And so the moral cudgel, the way we bully each other, often quite selfishly, is to accuse people of selfishness when they don't give us what we want. A common form of that is the obsession. I write a lot for Psychology Today, and some of the most popular articles there are about how to detect a narcissist. Well, you got to figure out whether someone's a narcissist or they're just not very interested in giving you what they want. I mean, maybe their attentions are elsewhere.
Right, there's a difference.
A huge difference. And so we all naturally reach for these shaming absolutes like don't be selfish or be kind. We're not paying much attention at all to how none of us can live by those as absolutes. We all have to disappoint sometimes. We all have to pay attention to ourselves sometimes. It becomes a way to ignore the way that we're all invested in those activities. And pretend that it's, someone has violated some moral absolute that doesn't exist.
Right. And I mean, sometimes even though you're told you're being selfish, you really are being selfless.
Yes, especially I would say, an example of that would be the selflessness of being compassionate enough to send a clear no once you've decided it, rather than stringing the other person along.
Right. So, like, let me give you an example. We had a caller who called in a little earlier who says that they're in a situation with a girlfriend they've been with for a couple years. And all of a sudden, she is announcing she's having a baby. But she's already maybe 4 or 5 months pregnant and hadn't said anything. And then all of a sudden, these babies come early, and now he's got babies. And he doesn't necessarily want to marry this person. Should he? If it's not the right thing? Because, you know, I don't think he should, but I don't know. What do you think? Because when he's telling her these things, she's saying you're being selfish and you're not thinking about our child and all that kind of stuff, the guilt stuff.
Yeah, it's complex. I don't think in terms of formulas for this. It would take a whole lot more to know what would be the better bet in this situation, but at least I know this for myself. I have to be very careful about who, the company I keep. I say no to people who are quick to use those moral cudgels. That is, anybody who translates their disappointment into "you have violated a moral absolute" that nobody can live by.
Right.
Can't be good company for me.
Right.
So if he's with someone who, for example, waits 4 months to tell him and then says, "You're being selfish for not doing what I want," those are red flags for me. I just can't be in that company for long. In part because if you don't want to be a jerk, you have to expect some anxiety. That is, when someone raises the possibility that I'm actually being selfish, I have to be receptive to that possibility. I have to consider it. So it's especially difficult company for someone who's going to be receptive like that if the other person is fast and loose with these moral absolutes that nobody lives by.
Got it. I want to play you a voicemail we just got earlier today.
Okay. My biggest struggle at work is saying no to my boss. There are some times where I feel as though I'm spread too thin, and he will approach me with work, and obviously I want to rise to the next level at my company. However, I feel a bit spread too thin. Is there a way to say no when I'm approached with certain work and not give the impression that I'm not willing to work hard? Thanks so much.
What do you think?
Well, it's a great question. I think there are ways to do that. It would depend on the circumstance and what kind of delegation can be done. I was looking online today at various articles on ways to say no, and I saw some that suggested particular phrasings for dealing with it, often ones that said, "I'm not the best person for this, but here's the better person for it." But a bigger question is this. I want to make this clear. I like what George Bernard Shaw said. He said, that don't fight with a pig. You'll just get dirty, and the pig likes it.
Right.
That doesn't apply directly here, but an aspect of it does. First of all, I want to say it's a great piece of advice, but you can't follow it all the time. Sometimes you actually have to fight with pigs, and sometimes you have to actually suck up the pigs. For example, if your only options for work or for climbing in a company involve dealing with someone who is imposing on burdens that you find overwhelming, there are times when you simply have to say yes. So I don't think that there's an absolute solution to these things. There are situations where you can't say no.
Right.
I am interested in the way that we pay attention to passive aggressiveness. It's another one of those negative terms as if one should never be.
Yes.
But I do like to point out that actually there are plenty of situations where passive aggressiveness is about the only option left open to you. But you can imagine living under an oppressive regime where the only way you can get by is through passive aggressiveness. It's not a vice. At that point, it's not a vice. It's actually... We need an equally pejorative word for the people who impose on us those burdens that make us, that compel us quite naturally to passive aggressiveness, since we have no other choice.
So it could be a coping skill, really.
Yeah, it's a reasonable coping skill in many situations. And
right.
We simply ignore that when we go with these sweeping formulas like passive aggressiveness is bad, you should never do it.
Right. I want to read you a email we just got in. It's Thomas from Santa Clara. He's asking, I do not handle breakups well, especially when I'm the one breaking up with a girlfriend. I try to explain myself, but usually this makes her even angrier. How can I say no without making it all about myself, my wants, and my needs when I'm the one making the decision?
It's tough and familiar. From my perspective, that is, I have found breakups difficult that way, and I think it's part because of the power and tendencies of romance. If you're midlife, or even if you're younger, you have to pour a whole lot into convincing each other that we are a we. There are so many reasons to be wary these days entering into a relationship. In part because we all have the ability to walk in a way that we didn't in the past.
Yeah, that's
to walk away.
Right.
So So we end up doing all of this work to fuse, to come together as a we, and then you have to backtrack against that. You create a current that you're swimming up against, and then you turn it around.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's going to sting a huge amount. And it's a reason to merge ambivalences earlier on, that it's to not be strictly romantic, to be a little bit more tentative, but that's also a problem in relationships. Relationships are at their most stable at 100% or 0%. If your partner says to you, I love you, and expects you to say it back, you can't say, yeah, I love you 70% today. I was at 80 yesterday, but I talked to someone else who was interesting.
Right.
I mean, you can't do that. The ambiguities in relationship, you know, once they're stirred, they tend to gravitate both of you out too quickly.
Right.
So it's hard in relationship, but at the same time, I think that recognizing that it's hard and being firm in a decision. And I mean, I think I've taken my greatest consolation, what I call the consolation of thoroughness, when in a breakup I know that we both tried hard, or more to the point, that I tried hard to make it work, made a decision. I tried very much up front to avoid overpromising. And you do your best you can, and you kind of you'll suffer through it. But I also think it's to this guy's credit, this person's credit, that that he is at least touched by doubt by the other person's response. Like I said, if you don't want to be a jerk, you have to expect some anxiety that comes from receptivity and feedback.
Yeah.
At the same time, you have to, go ahead.
No, I guess my other question to you in conjunction with this is, if the other person isn't hearing it and receiving it compassionately, do you lose it after a certain point, or should somebody just continuously stay that compassionate route despite the response you're getting to?
Not at all. I mean, and that's right on the point I wanted to make, which is the only way I can stay receptive to feedback is to keep my powers of discernment clear on such things as the guilt tripping that inevitably comes at the end of a relationship. You know, the kind of, you've disappointed me, therefore I'm going to pull out of thin air some moral absolute that nobody can live by and accuse you of violating it. You got to be good at hearing that stuff, at being able to see that when it's flying at you.
Right.
And to discount it as a result. Otherwise, your receptivity means that anybody can bully you with any of these, you know, you're too selfish, or you're a narcissist, or any of those things. You got to be receptive, but you have to be discerning about what you receive. And no, I wouldn't stick around for long, because actually the point is, we're no longer we. You can share your opinion, but we're no longer trying to figure out what we're going to do. I'm doing what I'm going to do next.
Got it. Okay, I got another voicemail for you. Hang on.
Okay. Hey, Dr. Sophie. Is it okay to be a little dishonest when saying no if it makes the other person feel better? I mean, isn't that compassionate? Thanks.
Ah, that's a really good one. Like, do you tell that little white lie to make the hurt less hurt? I don't know. What
do you think? So lying is, to me, another one of the moral absolutes that nobody lives by. We are all trying to balance care and honesty, intimacy with people and intimacy with reality. It's not easy. We generally seek out situations in which we don't have to lie much. But I don't believe that anybody gets through their lives without it. Hence, we have the term white lie. How do you distinguish a white lie from a black lie? I mean, a bad lie? It's harder work than people think. But you certainly can't just simply say, never lie. People don't do that. If you think about what lying really means, it just means giving a different impression from your primary impression of things. Well, we do that plenty, and we have to, kind of out of kindness. At the same time, there are lies to avoid at the end of a relationship. First of all, the lies that where one rationalizes it to the other person as if you are still a we when you're not. You know, it's got a kind of self-justification. That could include you pulling out of thin air, one of us pulling out of thin air, reasons that we think will bring comfort, but we have to keep in mind, this other person is listening very attentively when we say no more because X.
Right,
because they're paying close attention. Yeah, their ears are perked.
Yeah, they're going to track you. They're going to track everything you do.
Yeah, they're obsessed at that moment, and you owe them honesty about what you know.
Even if it hurts.
You don't know. Well, you owe them honesty about what you know, and you don't know everything. You cannot give someone the definitive answers about why it's not working. You're placing a bet that you're no longer good together. But you're placing it based on reasons you can't even know all the reasons. Very rarely do people know all the reasons why they do things. And to fabricate reasons is even worse. Because you can send them on a wild goose chase. They don't deserve that from me. In general, I try to make my no's definitive or decisive and say, if you want my guesses at why I'm placing this bet, I can offer them. Not so that we can re-engage, but otherwise, you know, just know that this was my decision, a clear signal, sending a clear signal, and not getting into tons of reasons is a reasonable approach, I think.
So, I mean, it's clear, it's compassionate, minimize or not have any untruth in it, because you're not going to get anywhere if you're fluffing it, correct? Because it's going to bite you at the end anyway.
Yeah, remember this about my approach, and it's a little different from others. I don't give formulas. I don't believe in formulas. I believe in paying attention to the dilemmas we face in these situations. Even a word like clear or compassionate, it's one or another person's guess, which is the subjective guess, whether something was clear or compassionate. I've had breakups where a partner says, "You're not being clear to me." Where I'm doing my best to be clear, and I can't tell whether she means that she doesn't like the answer or she just doesn't understand it. And at some point, I simply give up. You know, I'll say my three times why I've decided to break up and then leave us agreeing to disagree, or not even that, just disagreeing about whether I was clear. So it's not as though clear or compassionate are objective states you can achieve through some formula.
Right.
That's my approach.
Right. Sometimes it doesn't feel comfortable to be done, but it's got to be done.
Yeah, and sometimes it gets labeled as unclear or uncompassionate when that's one subjective interpretation and the other person's subjective interpretation, that is that it was.
Right. And what I found through my own life and through, you know, being a doctor and a psychiatrist, whatever, that even though the person may not think it feels right now, as they go through life, they see that it actually may have been a gift that they were given, but it didn't feel that way in the beginning.
That's right. So you're playing the longer game here, as far as I'm concerned. But I also want to keep in mind there are probably plenty of situations, where they don't end up converging on my impression of it, where even I end up converging on their impression of it, or we never converge at all.
Right.
We end up just having thought of how it ended differently.
That's
possible too.
Okay, another email for you. Carrie from San Antonio, Texas. She's asking, when saying no to a relationship, I feel like there's no way to make a really clean break unless I'm a little cruel and unmoving. If I talk about the good things that happened in a relationship, I feel like it leads them on. Still, I hate hurting someone's feelings when I end things. Is there a way to straddle that line between giving false hope and not hurting someone deeply?
Yeah, I think she's doing that. Yeah, that is, she is straddling that line. Notice that cruel, to call something cruel, once again implies you have violated a moral law, which nobody lives by, because you can't. You know, the only way you could live by it is to stay committed to everything you ever joined in your whole life.
Right.
That would be the only way to never be cruel or disappointing to anybody. So she has to figure out how to run that. You know, for me, it is a balance, and it's a guessing game, too. You kind of have to guess, in this situation, should I say something positive about what we have, or should I stay away from that stuff because it will only intrigue them more? It's a bet you place. And you place that bet and you watch the response to it. And if the response it ends up creating the we that you're trying to diminish, then you try something else the next time. That's the straddling she's describing, and I think that's just how you have to do it. The only thing I would add to it is be careful of those words like cruel. You're being cruel. Nobody lives by that stuff. You can't.
No, because there's no formula, and everything is going to be different.
That's right. Of course, and of course, there are things we all agree are cruel. That, you know, there are questions of degree. It's not like I'm saying, hey, everybody's cruel, so you know, go ahead and be cruel.
Right.
Not at all. It's a real distinction that is unfortunately made subjectively. There's no formula for figuring out whether something was absolutely cruel or not.
Got it. So, Dr. Sherman, tell me, where can we find you and a lot of your expertise and information and guidance?
Well, I write a column for Psychology Today called Ambigamy, Insights for the Deeply Romantic and Deeply Skeptical.
Yes.
And I have lots of articles up there. Yeah, and also the name of the thing is Ambigamy, but it's not really mostly about love and relationships. It's about, in general, how to be both skeptical enough that you can say a no when you need to, and romantic enough to be able to commit to things and invest in them.
And that's
key.
That's very key.
Yeah, for me, it's kind of central. It's how do you invest knowing that there's a chance you'll have to divest.
And be able to do it with dignity and pride.
Yeah, as much grace as you can, which for me, again, is understanding the terrain of that dilemma of how to invest knowing you have to divest.
Right, because it's the yin and yang of life sometimes, right?
Yeah, very much the yin and yang. Actually, it ties to yin and yang.
Is it?
In a way, yang is the sort of decisiveness, which would be I'm all the way in or I'm all the way out. And yin is that receptivity we've heard from a few of your callers and writers where they're not sure. They're not sure whether they should be in, whether they should, for example, be paying attention to these protests from their ex-partners about, you know, how they're being cruel or selfish or whatever. You know, how do you manage that tension between being, you could say, sure and unsure is what the yin and yang were originally about.
Got it. So do you have a website or somewhere we can start looking for you?
Well, I would look up the word ambigamy or just my name, Jeremy Sherman, and you'll find way too many articles on all sorts of topics.
And how about your book? Do you have a new one coming?
I have a new one coming. It's actually on the origins of life. I do origins of life research on the side, and so it's called Neither Ghost Nor Machine, Explaining Aims in an Aimless Universe.
Wow.
But that's not going to be out for a while. I have a book online called Negotiate with Yourself and Win, Doubt Management Techniques for People Who Can Hear Themselves Think, was its long title. But that's an old book. I'll have others. The best place to find anything current would be my Psychology Today site.
Got it.
Ambigamy.
Got it. Dr. Jeremy Sherman, thank you so much for your time and expertise.
Yeah, it was a pleasure talking with you.
Thank you. Bye.
Okay.
All right, everybody. So that was Dr. Jeremy Sherman. He was our expert today. Decision theory. He's a master in public policy at UC Berkeley. Very intelligent man and very well spoken, well written. And he talked about the things that we need to know to be able to say no in a loving, compassionate way. And these are the four things I think that you should really take a look at as you listen through this. Number one, we really have to see that the concept of love, as he says, is not really a question. Life and love is not a question, but it is more of an answer. And so if you want to give love, you can give it, but it's not a question that you're out searching for. You already have that to give. It's just if you want to give it. It's not, you know, can I give it? And then knowing that is the baseline foundation, then you look at life thinking as you go through it, commitments and things like, should I say it? Should I stay with it? Should I join into it? Those are the simple decisions that he sees that we make through our life on a daily basis. Should we say it to somebody? Should we join that group? Should we stay with a activity or a concept or a program or whatever we're in? These are the simple decisions of life that we have to say yes or no to. And saying yes is always an easier place to be than saying no to a lot of things because, again, it will hurt someone else's feelings or it may make people not feel positive about us. So learning how to do it in a compassionate, clear way is what Dr. Jeremy Sherman is trying to show us. So that's the first thing. I think understanding that there are several things on our everyday basis that we have to say yes or no to, and saying no has to be done in a clear and compassionate way. The second thing I think is important to understand is how to do the clear and compassionate way. And how to do it is to do it in a definitive way, which means it's clean and it's done and it's not mixed. So it's not saying one thing but behaving another. For example, we are not going to remain together in this relationship is saying it, but you also have to behave it, because it's a little uncomfortable to behave it, but that's where the follow through has to be. And then doing it as compassionately as you can, knowing that the other person may not receive that compassion and may react in a negative way, but you still need to remain clean, clear, and compassionate. I think the third thing that's important for us to take away is don't act like we're a we, live like we are separate then. If you're going to break away from something, whether it's another person or it's out of a group or it's out of a relationship, the bottom line is if you're going to be saying no to someone or something, you have to act it and you have to behave it, because it's the behavior that speaks, not just the words. The words are the first step, the second step, and the follow through is the behavior. So number three is really important. Really live it and behave it once you say it. And then keep the power of discernment in that whole process of number three while you're behaving it. Because as you behave it, you're going to get negative feedback maybe from the other person. And some of that negative feedback, you need to be discerning. So if they're telling you that you're making a bad decision or you're being selfish or you're not being kind, don't discount it immediately. There may be some truth to it, so you got to hear it. Doesn't mean that they're right, but you have to be open to it and be discerning. And I think the fourth thing that's very important for us to understand is that there has to be a balance between care and honesty when you are saying no to somebody. So it's not an easy thing, we know that, but you have to take care in doing it and you have to be honest about it. And some people think maybe telling a little white lie here and there to make it fall a little bit easier on the other person is the better way to go. But at the end of the day, it is going to bite you, because you do need to have a good balance of honesty and care. Avoid lying, being open and owning your honesty, as painful as it may be, because in the long run, you're only putting off pain if you're not handling that up front. So again, having a good balance between care and honesty when saying no will get you to the place you need to get quicker and easier, but maybe not painlessly, but less pain overall. So those are the four points I think that are very important when we're looking at a compassionate way to say no. Thank you to all of you guys for listening, and to my guest today, Dr. Jeremy Sherman. What a wonderful topic and really good information and tools. You can find all of these podcasts on my website and on iTunes. My website is www.drsophie.com. My phone app is available on iTunes in their store, and you should go check it out. My voicemail is always available to you at 1-855-767-4966. My book is always available to you. It's called Side by Side, The Revolutionary Mother-Daughter Program for Conflict-Free Communication. Take a look at it and really take a read. It's a good toolbook and a way for a mother and a daughter to really learn how to communicate in a more healthy and effective way. Always follow me on Twitter if you want to know what's going on, or Facebook for any updates on TV or anything new in the podcast. Visit iTunes again to download the full version of Andy Grammer's Keep Your Head Up. And the most important thing for me is don't forget to sweep.